I sat down with Rachel Lang for just about 40 minutes. We met up at Balboa Park and picnic table in between the Science Museum and the Cultural Center de la Raza, just off of Park Avenue there. Many of you remember Rachel from her days as a deputy press secretary for Mayor Sanders. Since leaving her job, since Sanders termed out, she started her own firm, Lang Strategic Communications. Most recently, she was the spokeswoman for the Recall Bob Filner movement. We talked about her work on the recall campaign, who she thinks is going to run for Mayor Filner's seat now that he's resigned, and even the candidate she's going to work for and why she thinks you should vote for him. As always, if you want to jump on your soapbox because of something you heard, you can do that by jumping on ours. Just give us a call at 619-663-4531, 619-663-4531. Rachel Lang. Kids playing in the background there at Balboa Park. She handled it well. It's funny, sometimes you talk to people in these kinds of environments and they get distracted very easily. You can tell she's definitely a PR media relations pro. She stayed on message despite the drum circles and the jet engines and the people playing. So the airplanes fly over. It's not like there were jet engines there, but the airplanes fly over on their way to land at Lindbergh Field. So I hope you enjoy this. BullyZest.com political podcast with special guest Rachel Lang.
Now what? You Filner's out at the end of the week, right?
Right.
Not he wasn't out yet, but he's out at the end of the week. Essentially, I guess, what's he going to do for the rest of the week now?
Right.
I don't know.
You know, apparently he was adamant that he'd get that extra week, and no one really understands why. But the contract that, uh-huh, you know, has his resignation as part of, as one of the terms, apparently was...
So
he gets his last week, and I think that everyone's sort of on pins and needles about what he wanted to do.
What could he do?
Well, I mean, he still has the powers of the mayor.
Yeah.
So he could, I mean, council's not in session, so he really can't veto things. I think they do actually have a meeting on Tuesday or Wednesday, but, you know, they're going to call the new election. Mm-hmm. He can't veto that, obviously.
that would be funny.
Yeah.
That would...
I'm leaving, but you can't replace me. I think that one might get overridden, just to guess.
Yeah.
So he's he could still fire people, I suppose. You know, he could go through and clean house.
Yeah, but who would he get rid of at this point that hasn't already left, right?
I mean, I'm sure he has a list of people that he'd love to see go.
On his staff?
Well, not on his staff.
I mean, who does he have the authority to fire?
Anyone in the city that reports to through the mayoral chain. So he can't fire council staff. He can't fire city attorney.
Mm-hmm. Which he'd love to do, I'm sure.
Yeah, people in the city, exactly.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure he'd love to fire Andrew Jones, but he can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't think he can fire anyone in the clerk's office, but pretty much anyone else. I hope that's not why he's staying. I hope he's staying really just to tie up loose ends and maybe help find places for his staff members that don't want to stay with the interim mayor.
I would think that that's what he would be doing, right? Because there's some people that have stayed that could have left.
Yeah.
You know, that people were surprised didn't leave.
Yeah.
And just kind of toughed it out, you know. I mean, particularly Lene, she toughed it out big time.
Right.
You know, everybody expected her to just, you know, I mean, that must have been an
run screaming from the building.
I know. How awkward for her, you know. I really kind of feel bad for her in a lot of ways because, you know, she's a nice person. I always thought she was
she's very nice. The inability to, because he was such a micromanager, they didn't have the opportunity to do their jobs.
Yeah.
And so basically you become, when it puts the secretary and press secretary, I guess, basically they got to take messages and bring them to the mayor.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of how it went. And, you know, when you're a communications director or a press secretary, you need to be able to respond to the media. These are your relationships. Mm-hmm. This is what your entire career is built on, is your relationships with the media and your ability to be helpful with them, or helpful to them. and hook them up, you know? I mean, they couldn't do any of that. It was basically...
Her hands were totally tied.
Yeah.
Her and Irene's, they were totally... Yeah.
All I can do is take the message and hope I can get back to you. And it's embarrassing. And it made... I think that people started to understand that it wasn't them, that it wasn't their competence. It was the office structure and the micromanaging by the mayor. But I mean, for months, people just thought, "What is wrong with these people? Why can't they do their? Why can't they do the simplest things? Just respond to the media requests, you know?" And it was because they were to do so would have basically threatened their jobs.
Yeah. So, what's do you know what Todd's plans are now? Because he becomes the interim, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Can he run?
He can.
He can run. Okay.
He can run. And, you know, none of the council members have any, you know, normally you, at least some of them have to make a choice between running for mayor or running for another term of council. Of course, Todd's termed out anyway. Yeah. But he doesn't have to give up his council seat. And so he may run. He definitely is entertaining it. It's clear. He was on Politically Speaking, you know, one of the shows and made it pretty clear that he was mulling a run. But he'll be interim mayor, and I think he'll do a great job.
I know that group, Run Women Run, I talked to their president. She wants Tony Atkins.
Yeah. I am 99% sure that Tony's out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What makes you 99% sure? I called, and of course they were like, they gave me a similar response, but.
Right.
When I called Tony's office.
Well,
what makes you sure?
Well, there's a couple things. One, she has, you know, a very bright future in the legislature.
Are there term limits on state legislature?
They have this new rule, and I don't want to get it wrong, but it's something like you can serve 12 years in total in either camera, right? So either the Senate or the Assembly or some combination of both, but 12 years is the total term or the total time you can serve in the state legislature.
Okay.
And how, so she could continue to go on in the Assembly for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good jobs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they come with a pension, I think, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, Tony Atkins is married to a woman whose entire business is built around city contracts.
Okay.
So for her, you know, that's really
that
putting her
really
wife's
awkward.
Career in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And I think that might be... another, you know, factor. I don't know for sure, but her wife, Jennifer Lasar, is incredibly successful, affordable housing, homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, she does contracts that help help low-income situations in the city, and she's, you know, it would be a great loss to the city to have her have to give up her business, really.
Yeah, yeah. So Todd may run. Fletcher's already going to run. So, and I, DeMaio told me no, hell no.
Did he really?
Not DeMaio, Dumanis. I always screw those two up.
I was like,
Dumanis.
Wow.
DeMaio, no.
That is not what I'm
DeMaio
hearing.
Was something I wanted to bring him up later because of this whole controversy that ended up on Mediaite.com and Think Progress and the OC Register and stories like that are coming out kind of have this real kind of prurient. I don't know how to. They feel wrong when you read them,
right?
You know, but at the same time, you know, they don't get any play as much play in local media. I think that OC Voice of Orange County story is getting a lot more play outside of San Diego,
right?
Do you think that will affect his decision to run? Do you think that story is going to make a splash locally? Because I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either, and I know that...
Except for the reader, you know.
Yeah, and I know that story was shopped around during the campaign by the person who wrote it, Rex Dalton, and there was a lack of confirmation about, you know... I mean, you can print a story that someone said something, that Ben Hueso said this, and...
Yeah.
And... You know, that's on. It's a story in and of itself that he would even say that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that he would vouch for that and say that it happened. And he, I mean, is an eyewitness, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's testimony and that's evidence, right? I mean,
right.
You know, I was talking to my dad about that. And he laughed because he's had clients. He's a criminal defense lawyer, and he's had clients who've had that that as a crime. You know,
right.
I mean, that's the thing he thought was most awkward about that. There was no, I suppose there's a question about where the criminality is, if there was criminality and what evidence was. And
right.
He was in office, and can you prosecute someone in office without... I wonder if he was a Democrat, do you think that that would have blown back in his face a lot sooner?
I don't know. You know, I think politics in general is a little weird.
Yeah.
In terms of what people will stay quiet about, just because there's so much of an implication of doing anything, and you know, you want to weigh the, you know, weigh the costs. Mm-hmm. To saying something like, if you're wrong, for instance,
yeah.
like maybe I got that wrong. You know, I think people are very reluctant to jump to conclusions.
Yeah.
And if they think that they got it wrong, or they think there's any chance that there could be some sort of mitigating circumstance or extenuating circumstances. So they let things pass because it would become so public, and because they themselves would be thrust into the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the Filner case is a perfect example. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, all of these women, why didn't they come forward before? Why didn't the media report this? The media was told a lot of vague things, and they tried to confirm it. They tried.
I mean, it's how just, do you, that's the thing is, how do you,
you
confirm?
Can only confirm it. If someone had come forward and said, this really happened, this is what happened to me. This was my experience. But all of these women thought it just happened to them because they didn't talk about it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you have everybody with this tiny piece of the puzzle.
Didn't
and they don't want to be out there alone.
I remember hearing one or two of the women that complained about him sort of awkwardly coming on to them.
Right.
And they complained to at the time, this would be 5 years ago, six mm-hmm. years ago, the head of the local Democratic Party.
Right.
And they got a letter of apology that way. So in a way, it seems like people were making noise, you know, and that he was coming. People were just saying, well, he's just awkward.
Yeah.
He's just clumsy and kind of lecherous.
Right.
He's just a sleazeball. He's not criminally a sleazeball. He's just
and that's
a sleazeball.
Something that was, it wasn't a secret. That was very open. It was an open secret. You know, it was everybody knows that Bob Filner is going to ask you out on a date when you meet him. I guess that's kind of how it was. But asking someone out on a date or... You know, I mean, it's not that it's poor judgment.
It's awkward.
And it's awkward. But to do it to constituents, to put your hands on them when they come to ask you for help,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's the different.
To come on,
that's
to
a different level.
That's,
right. Exactly. I don't think anybody knew that there was that kind
now,
of depravity.
He started to do this later in his life. Right.
That is what I've heard from people who've known him a long time, is that, you know, a little bit of. You know,
do you think
skirt chasing, for lack of a better word, turned into really predatory behavior. It just kept getting worse. And I think as his power was, you know, grew
mm-hmm.
and his sense that nothing could ever touch him
mm-hmm.
grew, he got worse.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it just escalated and escalated and escalated. I don't think he was always like that, and everybody ignored it for 20 years. I think it got worse and worse and worse, and people sort of went, is this what I think it is?
Yeah.
And then, you know, another thing that makes women not they think maybe I got that wrong. Maybe I didn't.
Yeah, because it's so outrageous, so you obviously weren't understanding it, because nobody would behave this bizarrely.
Yeah, and no way that did he stay in office. He's been in office for 20 years. No way could he have been, or, you know, he's been in Congress for 20 years. Mm-hmm. No way could he have lasted that long if this was how he behaved. Or maybe I, you know, what did I...
I don't know. I mean, do you think that maybe people in D.C. cover up this kind of behavior in general? It's sort of part of the culture to insulate these guys, to treat them a little bit like stars.
Yeah,
you know,
I do.
And that could be how a lot of these guys get away with a lot of stuff.
Right.
That's the thing, right? If you want to get away with things, go to Sacramento or D.C. because nobody's
that's what
there.
They say. Yeah.
You know, it's true. I mean, there's
especially if you don't have reporters there anymore.
No,
nobody has offices.
Reporters
yeah.
there anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody's paying for them anymore.
Yep.
I mean, and then so the only stories that get reported are national.
Right.
Big national stories. So.
And then you're one of 435 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. They're so outnumbered, the press, in both, you know, in both places with the legislature, in both Sacramento and D.C.
It used to be the UT back in the, I think it was in the late 80s, when after the first, after the mergers, when they got rid of the Sacramento office and got rid of the D.C. office shortly after that. Too.
Right.
You know, they had people. They had a full bureau.
Yeah. And they kept one or two people, I know, in D.C. for a long time. Copley did. But
they were kind of freelancy and not, like, focused on sort of local in a lot of ways. They're focused on bigger picture issues, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know.
And they should be looking at our delegation alone.
And following around ISA. Yeah. I wonder if ISA gets away with stuff that nobody talks about. Everybody's curious about that, right? I mean, people think he got away with stuff locally.
Right. Then, right.
You know? So, I mean, you know, if Filner can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and he was very clumsy and blatant about it.
Right.
Who else is getting away with things?
Right.
You know. But it was not DeMaio. He's clearly wants. Maybe he'll drop out of his congressional race. But Dumanis, she doesn't want.
Oh, no.
She doesn't want.
No way. She's going to go through that again.
I do not want a campaign at all.
Right.
Anymore.
And she's got a credible opponent. I mean, that her opponent is Bob Brewer, you know, for DA. And he's definitely a credible opponent. It's just hard to beat the DA. The sitting DA is always just has such an enormous advantage. And she has a lot of support from.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody. You know, various others in the county. Name recognition. They know her. Nobody really even knows.
Right.
Knows he doesn't have the profile.
Sure.
It's almost like if you want to beat DA, you have to wait for the current DA to retire.
Right. And then have an open race. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And she's got very strong backing from the Republican Party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of her. Remaining in the race during the during the primary,
a vote for Dumanis was a vote for DeMaio.
Correct.
Isn't that the same?
Exactly.
It was the same vote essentially, especially through that primary.
Right.
But do you think that the Democrats are going to pick another person besides Fletcher, or do they? Are they going to? I mean, he's got Irwin Jacobs. Qualcomm money behind him, and he's got a lot of support.
He definitely has the Qualcomm folks' support. He has a lot of tech and innovator business support. But he's also even last year when he was an independent, or last time before he made the full evolution, completed his evolution to Democrat, which he is a Democrat. I mean, there's just no question. Yeah. He really is.
You kind of feel like he was registered Republican partly because of his wife, and then partly because he didn't think he could get elected if he was a Democrat.
I don't think that that's it. You know, he grew up blue collar, and he saw the values that were espoused by the Republicans of, you work hard, you can make it, that sort of thing. He believed that. And, then he went to war, and then he came back and he saw these, all these veterans not getting the care that they needed. And he went into the legislature and he saw how everything... he got to meet a lot more people that he never would have had the opportunity to meet. And he saw how the really gut level impacts of the policies, Republican policies that are basically you're on your own. That's the attitude. And I think he started to see the value of a safety net and see the impacts of policies, in the real world. And realize, my values are such that I think that these people should be helped. I mean, he's a great guy. I don't know how well you know him, but he's he talked a guy off a bridge in Sacramento, for heaven's sake. Did you ever see that story? So, I mean, I think he realized that, the real values and the real way he thought about things are aligned with the Democrats. So... Anyway, where do we start on this?
I'm just wondering, who do you think is going to get the Democratic back?
Oh,
Todd
right.
Or Fletcher?
Well, that's tough to say.
Todd is right along those same lines, too. He's nice. He's smart.
Yeah.
He knows the city. He's from here. They're both kind of in that same boat in a lot of ways, right? They're both well-respected.
Right.
Yes. You don't look at Todd and think there's someone who's not well. So what do you do when you have two well-respected people within the Democratic Party? Why couldn't we have them running... before.
Right.
I mean, if this was so bad, what was wrong within the party locally that they couldn't put someone forward for mayor that wasn't Filner?
Right.
Before. Well, was there something within in the party or in the ranks, or was it just people didn't want to go for it?
It's just so much was timing. Yeah. There was so much timing, and there was the political mood – has changed a lot. I think with the economy being as lousy as it was for years, people started to realize that, hey, this whole job creator line that the Republicans put forth, the middle class is the job creator, you know? And people started to take a look again at the inequity between, you know, the level of CEOs making billions and billions and their, you know, the regular rank and file folks not making anything or, you know, stagnating. The wages are stagnating, the quality of life, you know, what they can buy with the money they're making has gotten steadily worse. And I think that people started to think twice about, you know, this idea that the rich people are creating the jobs. No, the regular folks who have some disposable income and can actually spend some money are the ones who create jobs. They're buying houses. They're buying, you know, if I'm a billionaire and I have another $1 billion in the bank, that's not going to change how I put money into the economy, you know? Mm-hmm. But if I'm somebody who makes...
You're not going to invest that money in a new business. I mean, that's the Republican argument, that these are the rich guys. They're the ones that invest money and help create new businesses, and that's what...
Who's going to buy their products? Who's going to be the customer of that business? If you're making it so that nobody has any disposable income, then you don't have a customer base. So mm-hmm. basically we're saying, okay, we're going to have all these businesses, but nobody can afford it because everybody's wages have been stagnant for years and years because we've been trying in every way possible to make it so that business doesn't have to ever pay an extra dime, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
San Diego's an easy city to start a business in too, right? Yeah. Other cities, San Francisco, I think a business license is almost $1,500.
Right. I just got my business license for my Lang Strategic Communications, and it was...
Because you are the queen of San Diego propaganda.
And it was like 80 bucks, I think.
It's 80 bucks. It's very cheap to start a business in San Diego. I mean, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I wonder what... It's a $1,500 to incorporate if you want to do an LLC, and there's other issues around that. And I don't know what is going to work for you, but San Diego's always been kind of business friendly in that sense, you know, and that's sort of seems to be what a lot of, you know, a lot of Republicans, like when I talked to Kevin Faulkner, when I had hit, that's part of his thing too, is he wants to keep it easy to start a business and keep it inexpensive to start a business.
And it should be easy to start a business, and we should be a business friendly place.
So who are you going to support? Are you going to work for anyone in this election? Have you been hired yet? Is Lang strategic community?
I supported Nathan Fletcher very, very heavily in the last election, and I would like to see him get elected, yes.
So you're gonna,
for sure.
How are you gonna crush Todd?
You know, Todd
that's
Todd
the
knows.
Problem, right? You can't what are you gonna go after him for? It turns into this really just from a media perspective, the last one was great because we had DeMaio and we had Filner. They were on TV. They're both kind of grumpy. They're both obnoxious.
Very easy to be negative.
It was great TV.
Yeah.
It was great TV. This one, if you have Todd and Fletcher, it's like, well, you know, we both like each other. It's
they
nice.
Do like. And, they and like each other and have tremendous respect for each other. So it is
so
tough.
You're going to have a very polite, gentle. It'd be like having tea.
Right,
you're not going to have this great made-for-TV argument. So well, how do you separate?
What I think
the two
you
people?
Do is you instead of attacking the other person, mm-hmm. you just say because let's face it, San Diego's very sick of that. We're so sick. We just got through a bruising and brutal mayor's race. Only 6 months in, we have this resignation and disgrace, and after allegations of really bad stuff, and I think what people want to know is just who's going to move my city forward? Who is going to make sure that I have the services that I expect and then, you know, provide a solid vision for moving forward sort of in a long-term way? And I have a lot of confidence in Nathan Fletcher and, you know, got behind him, you know, as soon as I've been basically behind him for since the day I, you know, first met him and heard about
I think
know,
that was my fourth
is.
Question I asked him when he came to the newsroom.
Oh, yeah.
When are you going to run for mayor? I know you term out. When are you running for mayor?
Right.
We all knew he was.
Right. Exactly. You know? And he's just, you know, I just think he
seems very San Diego in a lot of ways. He
right.
seems like...
Well, he's moderate. He's very hardworking. He's very organized. You know, he's just somebody that I think when he wants to do something, he will do it. Mm-hmm. You know? And if people believe in the policies and vision that he put forward, then they'll, I think, be able to also believe that he'll be able to follow through and get them done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I support him. I just think he's not only this is what impressed me the first time I met him. And obviously, you know, he shares my values, and I also think he's, you know, he's got the stuff to make things happen. But when you meet him, he will talk to you. He's not looking over your shoulder to see who's coming next. He's very sincere. He's very easy to talk to, and he listens. I mean, he really listens, and he remembers. And the next time he meets you, he'll remember what you guys talked about, and you could be, you know, just a regular person, you know, some regular Joe, and he'll remember you. And that's kind of, I think people really warm to that. I think they like that. They like to know that, you know what, I said something and it wasn't just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's pose for a photo. You know, he listens. So it's nice.
So what's the stuff? You say he's got the stuff. What does that mean?
You know, ambition also has to have, you know, the ability to follow through. So, you know, Mayor Filner, for instance, everything had to be a fight. Had to be a fight, or it wasn't worth his time.
The TMD thing, I think, is the perfect.
Right.
Right. I mean, you can make huge arguments against the TMD. I mean, and I think they're totally valid to make. You know, it was a group of hotel owners who got money from a hotel, essentially a hotel tax, and that is a tax. You know, and then they use that to advertise their hotels.
Right.
And now they would say, well, all of that money got dumped into San Diego's economy. San Diego grew as a result, the TMD. But at the same time, does San Diego need to run ads in other cities to get people to come here anymore?
Marketing our region is actually, it is valuable. It does have a return.
What's the return? What's the rate of return on something like that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know specifically, but I do think that marketing our region, especially when it comes to conventions, mm-hmm. is super important. I mean, especially conventions. I mean, you need to. I mean, they're salespeople basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just ads. It's a sales force saying this is how we can get you in, and you know, we're not as cheap as a lot of places, so we have to sell the enjoyment of San Diego to other regions as well. So, you know, I don't think that there's no value in a marketing district. But you're right. He did have some very valid arguments, and he managed to completely turn it on its head. It just became a story about a fight.
Yeah.
You know, he did it in a very shakedown sort of way. It's like, you know, if you don't believe in the TMD and you think it's an illegal tax, which is what he initially mm-hmm. came out with, then it's an illegal tax and you shouldn't support it being collected, period. You shouldn't say, well, but if you give me a cut of it, then I'll let it go. It's like a cop, you know, going around saying, you know, you're doing something illegal, but I'll tell you what, if you give me a cut of your illegal gains, then I'll look the other way. And that's essentially what he said. And I just thought that was a terrible argument. I didn't think that was something we would want our mayor to be doing. You know, he should have either resolved the illegality or, you know, negotiated with the marketing district to see, you know, how we could, you know, you could make arguments that there are a lot of costs to tourism that the city is bearing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that they ought to use some of that money to help defray some of the costs of tourism mm-hmm. that benefit the hotels and their profits. But that's not what he did. So it was a bad argument from out the gate. And it's just, that's what I'm talking about.
Do you
think
you can make those kinds of arguments in a public sphere these days and get any kind of results? Because had he come forward reasonably, would the media have paid attention? Would people have paid attention to what he was saying? He got a lot of attention. Not a lot of people knew what he was talking about, but he got a lot of attention, you know?
And
it was that attention that I think gave him, or maybe he felt as though it gave him a little bit of power.
I think he could have he could have gotten results had he approached it differently. Yes, I do. I think he could have approached it with a, you know, first of all, a better argument. Not, this is illegal, therefore give me some of the money you're getting from your ill-gotten gains. You know, that's not appropriate. You know, so he could have approached it with a decent, and yes, you can. I mean, these are big strategy initiatives, mm-hmm. big things like this. You plan them. Yeah. I mean, I worked in this business, you think them through. You think
you're
about
a strategic communicator.
What do we want to accomplish and how are we going to get there? And not just, I'm going to run out and just punch somebody in the face and think that that's going to get, you know, they might hand over the lunch money. Sometimes they will. It's true. But that's basically his approach to everything. I'm going to go punch you, ask for your money, and, you know, hope you don't fight back and hope you just hand it over. Mm-hmm. But that's not a strategic approach. And he was never strategic about anything. And he never knew.
And that was because of his micromanaging.
Right. And he never believed anybody who had solid advice about this is how you get things done in this, mm-hmm. in City Hall. I mean, you gotta build your case. You build support for it. You go out and you ask for support from, you know, some of the people who are influential on the topic. I mean, there's a way that you get a public policy initiative done. And he didn't seem to want to play, you know, he didn't want to take the time or the effort or make the, you know, do the asking around that you have to do. And sometimes you have to kind of supplicate yourself and, you know, go to somebody that hasn't always been your friend and say, look, I think we have mutual interests. Can we work together on this? And, mm-hmm. you know, his ego wouldn't allow him to do that. And, you know, a lot of people said, you know, look at this is what Jerry Sanders did, right? He had really smart staff
around
him.
You're a Democrat, but Jerry was Republican.
Right.
You worked for his.
Right.
You were his. What was your communications director?
I was actually the deputy press secretary.
Deputy press secretary.
So, but I mean, you know, we worked on these initiatives, and you had a team. You had a policy person who got into all the nitty gritty and mm-hmm. all the details and looked at how things, you know. What should be done, mm-hmm. and you make a recommendation to the mayor, like, we think this is good, and this is why it's valuable, and blah, blah, blah. And then he would say, okay, I would like to do this. Then you proceed with a plan. And your plan includes how do you bring in, you know, the communities, stakeholders affected by it, and how do you get the media on board with it, and how do you... So, you know, people who are effective in an executive office tend to... be very goal oriented and, you know, think through how they're going to achieve it. And I think that, Nathan is definitely one of those very strategic thinkers and just works his butt off. He really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's never had a problem showing up at 5:30.
Yeah.
Call him.
Sure.
Yeah. He's there. He's like, I'm up anyhow.
Yeah.
So, when's his official campaign kickoff event? Have you guys planned a party yet?
Can I probably, you know, don't want to talk about all this yet. when are you posting this little podcast?
I can hang on to it. Normally I post them, I'll post them every week, uh-huh. but I can hang on to this for a couple of days. But if you don't want to, I know, obviously, so you've got plans, you're making plans.
Well,
you just don't want to share that.
If you hold on to it until, say, Wednesday.
Wednesday? Okay. Okay.
I edit this little negotiation out.
All right.
I'm kidding.
I know. Wednesday, I can, like, Wednesday morning?
Well, I think he's going to, well, here's what he's going to do. He's going to...
I'll put it out Wednesday morning. How's that?
I think over the next couple of days, he's going to talk to media. Media's been calling, mm-hmm. you know, ringing his phone off the hook, obviously.
We want him on our show Monday morning.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See if he'll come on Monday morning. We've got Todd coming on. We've got Kevin coming on. We've got a couple other people coming on. We definitely want Nathan on it.
Good to know.
Monday morning.
And he doesn't want to ignore requests from the media, obviously. Mm-hmm. You guys are an important part of the whole public process for everything. But so I think he's going to just meet with some members of the media Monday, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
what does that mean? Meet with, like,
just
give interviews,
sit down and talk with them on or off camera, whatever you guys want. You know, just to, you know, reintroduce himself and talk about, you know, his plan and what he's thinking. And then, you know, all through this week, he's going to be meeting with, and has been for quite some time, but, has been meeting, you know, mm-hmm. keeping abreast of what's going on. But I think wanting to hear specifically, now that we know that there's actually a mayor's race, wanting to hear specifically what people want to see in their next mayor. You know, we've had 6 months of a mayor that's completely different than Jerry Sanders. And I think people may have new ideas mm-hmm. from the last race of what they want. You know, what did we see in this new administration that was completely different from the prior 8 years or 7 years, as it were, that we think should be included? Things maybe we never even thought about before, you mm-hmm. know, about our city. And so, and I think it's important, you know, he's going to be representing the city, and it's such a diverse city.
What has he learned? Is there one thing that's really standing out?
We should talk to him about it.
Definitely talk to him about it.
But yeah, I mean, I think that I hear a lot of, you know, disappointment that we had a progressive finally in office and now we're losing that progressive.
Fletcher doesn't come across as a progressive Democrat.
Well, I would say he is.
Yeah, but he does. He was a Reagan Republican for a while, right? Uh-huh. He seems more along those lines.
More of a
blue collar-y Democrat, more of a traditional kind of labor.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not a union guy, but what an American would perceive as someone who comes out of a working class background,
right.
who isn't necessarily progressive. Progressives, I tend to think of, have more of an academic background. He doesn't come across as progressive in that sense. In the same sense that if you took out all the other crap involved in Filner, that Filner came across as like a traditional kind of liberal in a lot of sense.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think you could put Filner in that, or Fletcher in that class. He just doesn't seem to be, I don't know. From my perspective, he just seems to be very...
He's not ultra liberal. He's not extreme in any way. He's really just not an extreme person. But he's very much, you know, somebody who likes to look at an issue and just be reasonable about it. I think that's what everyone likes about him, is they feel like, you know what, I may not always win with him. I may not always convince him of my side, but I do feel like he's going to listen, and I do feel like he's going to be reasonable, and he's not going to just say, well, I'm a Republican, therefore, blah, 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 or I'm a Democrat, therefore, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Making decisions.
Well, because he's been a Republican and a Democrat. Right.
When he was a Republican, he was constantly bucking the party. Constantly. He got into so much trouble with them. And ultimately, they didn't endorse him because he was too much of a Democrat, basically. I mean, that's what everybody used to say. All the Republicans used to say, you know, he supports, you know, marriage equality. He supports all these progressive causes, particularly LGBT mm-hmm. issues. Where he got just calls and calls and calls from people who would say, you know, I thought you were a Republican. And
did that happen to Sanders?
Yes.
When he
very similar,
changes
very
position.
Similar. People were very angry, and I guess that was probably, especially with the LGBT stuff. I think that's where, and the kind of vitriol that he got from some Republicans on, especially the leadership. I mean, a lot of Republicans are pro-equality, you know, but the leadership and the platform and the party.
Well, it seems to be more of a, like an international, when you look at sort of the international, like conservative parties,
mm-hmm.
the Tories, even the PRI in a lot of ways, they're all very pro. They have a more of a libertarian.
Right.
So it seems to be that's the wing of the Republican Party that doesn't have an issue with gay marriage or a lot of other things along those lines, because they're libertarians,
essentially.
And that's DeMaio. He's essentially a libertarian. He's told me that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of where his political perspective comes from.
There's other
problems with the Libertarian Party, libertarianism. So it doesn't surprise me in a lot of ways, and it's just because the Republicans have been hijacked by religion, and that those issues have been pushed to the forefront.
Right.
So,
but I mean, that's their values as a party.
Yeah, there's been people trying to push the religious right out of the Republican Party for a long time.
And they seem to be getting worse and worse, frankly. I mean, I just see the party getting more and more extreme, and I think that that's...
But San Diego's Republican Party doesn't seem to be that way.
The coastal Republicans.
Yeah, you know, you have, like, West Hollywood Republicans, right? I mean...
Sure.
You know, DeMaio's openly gay. I mean, Dumanis is openly gay, and they're Republicans.
Right.
You know, those issues don't seem to be the same here.
Right.
And that's, I mean, in San Diego, and that's... What we're talking about seems to be more of a national party issue.
Right.
But locally, it doesn't seem to be a problem at all.
And yet, all of those... votes that Nathan took that were along, you know, where he went along with the Democrats got him into so much trouble with the party leadership. And, you know, at some point you start to look and you go, if these are my friends, you know, who needs enemies, right? If somebody's constantly, you know, beating me up and taking me to the woodshed for voting for what I think is right, then maybe I'm in the wrong party, and I think that's exactly why he decided to, you know, move to Democrat.
So is the San Diego Democratic Party, are they going to support him, do you think?
I don't know. So
it'll be very exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I get excited when there are elections. We'll have to have another debate at Fox 5. Remember
yes.
We did the debate in the morning show?
That was fun, and I got to come live.
I felt like that was a really good debate. We'll have... I wonder how many people are going to be in this one. So what happens now? Is it just whoever gets the most votes, or is it...
No, it's going to be a primary general situation.
Primary general,
so it'll be like a 30... Well, it's 90 days to the primary.
If somebody doesn't get 51%,
correct.
Then the two top have
right.
a runoff again.
Right.
So when the primary is going to be... They have to figure out when that is then, huh? I guess.
Yeah, it's probably going to be somewhere around Thanksgiving.
That's a good time to... This would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Put it right in the middle of sweeps,
you know,
for
I just,
us is what I think would be best.
Right. I want for people to heed the words of Bronwyn Ingram and let's focus in. Let's be positive. Gosh, I don't think we can handle another bruising campaign season. I hope that, you know, another partisan and negative and, you know, geez, how are you going to move the city forward? Let's all talk about that, because I'm really eager to close this chapter and get to a point where we're actually doing things and making things happen in our city, for heaven's sake.